Okay, good evening and welcome to the regularly scheduled April 5th meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Trustees. The board met previously in closed session. We reviewed one possible disciplinary action against an employee. It was discussion only and no action was taken. Do we have consensus on the order of business?
I would like it if we could move the discussion on assessments after our student representatives and before any other business. I do need to leave this evening for the National School Board Association meeting, and I'm flying to Boston tonight. So if we could do that, I'd appreciate it.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'm wondering, did you want to move that after student representatives, or did you want to have Dr. Brescia speak as well, and then?
I think if we could allow our student representatives and Dr. Brescia to speak, and then make that our first, and Mrs. Settle, of course, not Mrs. Settle, make that our first order of business. I think it's a really important conversation, and I'd like to participate in it if I could.
Okay, so then that would be after the California Retired Teachers Association mini-grant awards? Okay, is there consensus on that?
Yes.
Okay, so we'll change the agenda. Is there anyone in the public who takes exception to that change? Seeing none, that change is cast in concrete. And we will move on to, we require approval of the minutes of March 22nd. Mr. Questenberry.
I'll go ahead.
So I have a motion by Mr. Questenberry, a second by Mr. Buckman. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That passes 7-0. Student representatives to the board. Let's switch it up. We'll go to Nick Helms from Morro Bay High School, please.
Hello, I hope you guys had a good spring break. It was a nice break. So just before we went on break, we had 10 teachers get back from High Tech High in San Diego, and they said that it really influenced them and made them want to do more project-based learning, and it really taught them how to do that. And these next week, we are going to have Mock Rock sign-ups and tryouts, so that'll be interesting to see what talent we have this year. And prom is going to be April 23rd in Atascadero. It's going to be at Pavilion on the Lake, so switching it up. We'll see how that is. The lake's filled up a bit more from the rain. And Friday is our deadline to sign up for grad night. We're going to go to Six Flags this year, hopefully have some fun. And that's all about we have going in Morro Bay.
Okay, thank you. Bella Stenball from San Luis Obispo High School.
Hello. So because we just got back from spring break, I won't be too redundant, but I wanted to spend some time letting you know how our Mental Health Awareness Week is going to run next week, because that's probably one of the most important events that's going to be going on in the next month for SLHI. There's a lot going on, but this is probably something I'd like to share. So the purpose of the week is mainly to try to combat stigma when it comes to mental illness. We are trying to create a culture on campus where people feel okay to ask for help, where you can have a conversation with a teacher or a staff member or a fellow student about what's going on, where people don't really feel ashamed to talk about the idea of mental health. We think that that's something on our campus that we'd like to change, so this is sort of our first big step in trying to combat that. The main idea behind this being is telling students that they are not alone and that they are worthy, so there's a lot of self-worth incorporated in there. Our TNN, which is our news anchor area, so it plays every second period on all of the screens all over school. That's our biggest tool for that, so every day there will be public service announcements, a lot of facts, figures, and statistics, but also a lot of videos that we've worked through. We spent a long time trying to figure out which ones would be the best, because there's a lot of information out there, trying to find mainly things that would show students that this is a national phenomenon, that they're one in four people struggle with some mental illness, so that if you are struggling with depression, anxiety, which we know that a lot of our students are, or something more severe, you are not alone in that fight, and that you should be able to feel comfortable enough to come out and speak to our counselors and speak to those around you in order to get help. We're also going to make sure to advertise a lot of the hotlines available. The Trevor Project is mainly for LGBTQ teens, also the SLO hotline and the crisis text line, which I've talked to you guys a little bit about, so reminding them that that's there. We are also, on Wednesday, I send an email out to all of our teachers. We're requesting that after that bulletin, they spend about 5 minutes talking to their students in that second period class about their own experience with mental health, or just ways that you can reduce stress, or if you have a class of seniors, talking about the idea of going to college and maybe their experience. So anything they have, we sort of send out like a list of ideas or talking points, just so we can start a conversation within those classrooms, not taking up too much time, but just so that students know that that's something they can talk to their teachers about, and that their teachers have obviously gone through very similar things that they did when they were in high school. We're also having a student-made video, which I'll probably show here after the fact, with more student voices about the idea of mental health. This is going to culminate in the semicolon day, which we had last year. I don't know. I know Jono probably talked about it a little bit. There's a national project semicolon, the idea behind it being that an author uses a semicolon to pause a sentence rather than ending it, the sentence being symbolic for your own life. So it's a lot of suicide awareness, something that we're very passionate about at our school, especially at a time like right now. So we'll have stickers going out to all the students with semicolons on them, a lot of kids in t-shirts really emphasizing this message of having a story that continues on rather than stopping it when life maybe get a little too difficult. That's also going to culminate with a mental resource fair on that Friday. We have about 12 different local organizations, along with Friday Night Live, Transitions Mental Health, a lot of different local groups and our counselors that are going to be out on campus on booths with lots of information for our students about local resources and clubs and support groups, so that all of our students know that there is a place for them and there's a place for them to go if they feel like they are struggling with something or they just need someone to talk to. So we are trying to make sure it's a positive week, not necessarily something that's depressing or down, because that's not necessarily something you want to see. So a lot of it will be solutions and ways that students can really impact each other through kind words and mindfulness, just with how we interact with each other as high school students. So I'm very excited, and I'll let you know how it goes.
Okay, thank you. Mrs. Sheffer.
Bella, I wanted you to know that earlier today I heard a TED Talk and the woman speaking was the person who started the suicide text line. And it was very interesting and actually quite uplifting, which may not seem that it would go hand in hand. And it made me very grateful that San Luis High has started that program. And I appreciate that the data they collect and the research they're doing with the information they obtain, and to help others and improve the program. And thank you.
Okay, seeing no other board comment, we thank you very much for coming, as always, and joining us. You're welcome to stay for all or part of the meeting and participate, but we're mindful that you have other things that you're involved in as well and homework to do, so feel free to leave whenever you're ready and with our thanks. At the time the agenda was published, no correspondence had been received. Oh, what did I miss? Oh, I beg your pardon. We have with us tonight Dr. Brescia, County Superintendent of Schools.
Good evening. Madam President, Governing Board, Dr. Prater, thank you. I wanted to come before you this evening to update you a little bit on the county. My first year in office has quickly moved by, and several of the things that are going on in Sacramento that will affect your district, and then some of the partnerships that we're promoting throughout the county. First off, I'd like to thank you, along with all of the other school districts and the charter schools, Cuesta and Pauley, for partnering together for the Career and Technical Education Grant. We were one of the few successful counties in the state to receive such a large amount, and that's due in part to your district's support. And I do believe that we're stronger together than trying to create little empires or fiefdoms throughout the county. If you look at our total student population in the county of just under 35,000, we're smaller than most of the urban school districts in the Bay Area as an entire county. So when we work collectively, I think we can achieve much more. You're allowing us to purchase the contract of one of your teachers to move in as our workforce and work placement coordinator has been very much appreciated and is helping to move the program for the entire county forward. So I really do feel that we are moving forward as a county to prepare students for college and career. And notice I said and, not or. I see our graduates leaving secondary programs throughout this county having options and to move into either direction, and it's just very positive, so I thank you much for that. Some of the overall stats from around the county, we have approximately 200 first or second year teachers throughout the county right now enrolled in induction, and I see those numbers holding steady at least for the next 2 or 3 years. Right now, initial estimates are that we'll be about 100 brand new teachers offered contracts throughout the county this year coming up. If you look at all of the districts, the largest growth is in North County currently. I think Paso Robles is going to hit the high water mark with about 30 new teachers just in their district alone this year. We have just under 60 first and second year administrators in the county completing their credentials. Those numbers will probably hold for the next year or two. We'll see a slight drop in overall new employees, and then it will spike up again as the next wave of the baby boomers start to retire. So this is going to be a recurring theme for us throughout the county. I believe your district is best positioned just because of geography next to the university, and you really do are able to pay the highest of all of the districts in our county. So from a competitive standpoint, you're better positioned than some of our rural and remote districts throughout the county. But it is going to be more challenging for you to fill some of those hard-to-staff positions. So we've partnered up with Brandman University, and we'll be offering an initial credential program for individuals that already possess a bachelor's degree, and this will be an evening weekend model held at the county office, and some of your faculty or administrators will actually be instructors in this. This will be entirely led by the field. We're hoping to see a cohort of 20 to 25 individuals per year move through this program, and it will be a different demographic than Cal Poly. If you look at Cal Poly, the demographic is really the 19 to 22, 23-year-olds that are full-time students. These would be individuals that are second career, late start, possibly our instructional assistant pool that may already be working. Children have moved out of the house or are older. So really, each school district may be tapping one or two people on the shoulder and saying, hey, would you consider becoming a teacher? There's a lot to be said for individuals that are at a different point in life moving into the profession. So we're really going to encourage that, similar to what you're doing with your teachers, tapping them on the shoulder to consider becoming administrators. So those are some of the things we're partnering across the county. I have to report LCAP. Every district in the county has done extremely well in their reporting and their networking. I believe we've been very proactive, and your board should be complimented on really tying your priorities into your local plan and seeking input. You have an exemplary model that I'm showing other districts, not only here but throughout the state. And that isn't the report necessarily in every school district. So hats off to all of you on that. A couple of other things that are occurring in the county, we'll have a few open forums for the supervisors, and I have at least a representative from education at all of those, so it will either be myself or another district superintendent helping to moderate on those so that we can be engaged in that process, whether or not your district, well, you're going to have one of yours up, but not all of them specifically. And then there will be a safety forum occurring, the League of Women Voters, later this month, including the sheriff, your San Luis Obispo police chief, the FBI liaison for the area, and then myself and any other school representatives that would like to join, just so we can debrief. We've been doing I would say, a very good job of dialoguing when there are critical issues in the school. So, for example, recently with Templeton and earlier in the year with Atascadero, it may not directly impact you, but we're serving as a hub at the county to get that information out to the districts and the schools. It's just as important that, that SLO and Morro Bay High know when something hits at Templeton, because you need to have a heightened awareness. So something a little different, all of our operational supervisors, our maintenance and operations transportation directors, are meeting regularly to discuss how do we disseminate information. If there's a threat, if there's an issue at a campus in North or South County, we're trying to make sure every school district is notified. And then all of the brick-and-mortar private parochial schools are notified as well, because it really it's about safety of all the children in our county and all the individuals. So those are some of the things that I feel are working very well. The networking, Dr. Prater attends all of our superintendent leadership forums, and he's very, very supportive of that. A few things at the state level. There's some new legislation coming up about a substitute teacher and flexibility. So those of you, when you speak with your legislators or individuals, this is how I said it yesterday in Sacramento. I was talking to the staffer. I said, look, if one of your staffers leaves in the office here, nobody stands over your shoulder and says, I'm sorry, you can only have a temporary person in here for 20 days until you fill the position. That's really what we're being told with substitutes right now across the state, 20 to 40 days, depending upon the position there. It's ridiculous. I know it comes back from a labor policy decades ago, but I've been an administrator for nearly 20 years, and I have never seen someone try to staff a full-time position with a substitute. The substitute is a stopgap, a bridge. I'm sure there may have been practices at one point in time, but really lobbying to give us as districts the flexibility to move that. So those are one of the points right there. The second is I'm really not sure where we're going with the block grants on the early childhood education. The governor is keeping that very, very close to the vest on that. It concerns me a little bit if all of that is swept. I think it will impact especially locally funded districts such as yours in a different way than it will our locally control funded districts. So that's something to keep an eye on. I'm sure Dr. Prater can update you a little more on that. Another position point that the administrators as well as CSBA is taking to continue allowing the local flexibility for your accountability. And I'll just use the example of attendance. It means different things for San Luis Coastal than it may mean for Arroyo Grande or Templeton, not only from a financial standpoint, but also from a curricular standpoint. And having that flexibility locally to say, looking at your graduation rates, your stay rates, your completion rates of coursework, and the work product, not just an arbitrary attendance figure. If someone missed third period because they had an appointment, that's going to change your attendance. Or if someone takes 2 weeks off to travel, who's to say that that's not valuable? You as a local entity need to have more ability to use those benchmarks to report. So those are a few of the things that we were advocating in Sacramento. And then the final one was looking at our pipeline of teachers. I'm very, very concerned. If you take the Cal State system, for example, go back to 2000, the Cal State system, all 23 campuses, they're the largest provider of credentials, not only in the state, but the country. They awarded 77,000 credentials in 2000. Last year, they awarded 14,000 credentials. And largely in part to the due to the recession, as there were no jobs and we were giving pink slips, the universities tooled down. Well, they cannot tool up overnight. So this is an issue that will face us. I expect some openings in this county not to be staffed when we open school. You have a little insulation here because of your proximity to the university and your competitive wage package that you have. But this is going to be a challenge for all of us. So I have a brief little video clip which will talk about some of the things we've retooled our television stations. And this one we put together with our department as a sample of types of things that we can do for each school district. And this is specifically on recruitment. It's about 30 seconds.
The San Luis Coastal Unified School District believes that every child matters regardless of his or her circumstances. We invite you to consider accepting the challenge of joining our team. Our district is proud to employ some of the best educators, staff, and leaders in the state. We consistently provide the highest salaries, lowest class sizes, and best working conditions in San Luis Obispo County. Do you have what it takes to join our ranks? For additional information about career opportunities in the San Luis Coastal Unified School District, please consult our website, EdJoin, or our Human Resources Department.
Now, that's just a little promo I asked my department to put together to show you some of the things. We've retooled our television station and our production, as well as our YouTube channel, to promote the schools throughout the county. We did a nice feature on Los Osos Middle School, and you saw those were clips of all of your staff from somewhere that we put together, and you of course would write the dialogue and say what you want. I just pulled things off your website that I know about your district and put the dialogue together there for that. But those are some of the services that we can offer to the district to promote key aspects of your stewardship in the community and what you provide. So, at this point, any questions, comments? Again, I want to thank you for your continued support of students and serving on our governing board. That oftentimes you only hear people griping or upset, but you taking the responsibility to serve in this capacity, I believe that school boards and local city councils are really the last established leadership from a democratic process in the local community. You have that privilege and that responsibility, and I thank you for that. So questions, comments, anything I can clarify from the county standpoint?
Well, I don't see anything, Dr. Brescia. I thank you for the presentation. I think I speak for the board, and we appreciate your coming tonight and sharing with us. My personal comment would be I think that we were all recipients of your letter accepting our second interim budget and the positive review that you gave us. But I was particularly pleased that you took the time in that letter to thank the efforts of staff. And we all know that staff puts a lot of work into the creation of our budget. And so we made sure that staff was made aware of your kind words.
Oh, absolutely. You have a very dedicated, diligent faculty and staff in this district, and your office is consistently on it with returning information. You're at the bottom of my worry list right now.
Well, I just wanted to thank you personally for acknowledging their efforts, and we thank you for coming tonight.
All right. Well, if anything I can do, please let me know, and we're here. And I also want to thank Chris for helping. We've had a couple of staff developments with other governing boards, and I am sending people to watch you, just so you know. So some other – no, in a positive sense, as far as other superintendents and other governing board members, to just see how well you function, and I use you as a positive example. So, thank you.
Well, thank you for that. And just so you were certain, Dr. Brescia, Chris Unger is ours, and you may not have him back.
No, we just rent him out a little bit.
Okay, moving on to item 5.03, California Retired Teachers Association Mini Grant Awards. And that's to be presented by Kathy Settle of the California Retired Teachers Association.
Greetings, school board members. As some of you may know, my name is Kathy Settle, a San Luis Coastal retiree of nearly 10 years. I'm here tonight. I know, it went really fast. Seemed like yesterday. I'm here tonight to present CalRTA, to represent CalRTA, the California Retired Teachers Association. And at this time, I'd like to call forward Mark Riley, Jessica Hoffman, and Kevin Colom. As part of CalRTA, our mission is to protect and advocate for retired and active educators' pensions and other retirement benefits, and to support education in our communities. This last sentence is the primary reason I'm here tonight. This year, CalRTA Division 23 offered three $100 mini grants to teachers in this district. A total of 83 teachers from K through 12 applied for one of these grants. The CalRTA board randomly chose three recipients from three different grade levels. Mark Riley, 6th grade, from Los Osos Middle School. Jessica Hoffman, 8th grade, from Laguna Middle School. And Kevin Colom, science, for 11th and 12th grades, graders from San Luis High. We are happy to present these mini grants this evening and thank all those who made application. It's quite an honor to present these, and we're very excited. So, and I have to tell you, just kind of a little aside, Lucia Marr, I've received some also. San Luis Coastal really got out there and applied. I have to tell you, they did a fabulous job. So I'm very proud, and I'm proud to be part of this organization.
There you go.
Graphic artist always.
Thank you so
That's
much.
Such a nice picture. Mrs. Settle, thank you so much. Okay, as agreed, then we will move on to where. Item 10.01, Elementary and Secondary Assessment Calendar, which will be presented by Mrs. Shields and Mrs. McGrath.
Thanks. Good evening. I'm here tonight with Amy Shields, as well as Darla Batistic and Neil Eckert, to present to you a follow-up to the board study session that occurred previously around elementary, thank you, and secondary assessments. So tonight we're going to start with just thinking about that assessments come in four different basic categories. So when you think state assessments as well as district assessments, there are many other types of assessments as well as classroom-specific assessments. So when you think about state assessments, you can think about SELT test, for example, or SBAC assessments, physical fitness testing. There are district assessments as well. So you think about our English Language Arts and Math Common Assessments, or SRI, BAS testing. Those would be district-specific. There are, as you know, many other assessments, AP testing that takes place, SAT or ACT, that students may choose to do, as well as classroom assessments that occur on an individual basis and where teachers are gathering information. So you may think of that as a chapter test or a quiz or an informal type of assessment where teachers are just asking students to raise hands, etc. So think about assessments in those four categories, and we're going to start with elementary. Darla will start and will give a grade level example and walk you through what that looks like for some examples. Then we'll move on to Neil discussing secondary, and then we'll summarize with Amy at the end.
Thank you, Kim. I think in February we shared some of this information with you during this study session, and at that time you asked us to go back and provide some additional specific information. So some of the slides that you'll see here will look familiar to you from our board study session, but they have some added information. And I'll first point that out in the left-hand columns, the far left there, there's an S column and a T column for this second grade student profile. And the S column represents student time on assessment, and that was one of the additional pieces of information that you requested from us. And the T column is the estimated teacher time that teachers would spend grading or processing the information with that assessment. Those times on the far left represent one administration of the assessment. In a couple of slides, we'll share with you the combined times also as you requested during the study session. So let me walk through a typical second grade student assessment calendar with time estimates on it. The top part, as Kim was pointing out, represents what we would consider district common assessments. These are assessments that all second graders take, and we have one identified in reading, writing, and in mathematics. So if you follow the reading row across there, you'll see our actual K-2 reading assessment is the BAS, the Benchmark Assessment System, which I think you're familiar with from previous presentations. It's a one-on-one running record assessment. It's given three times a year at the end of each trimester, and it measures student Fountas and Pinnell levels that give you an indication of where a student, what kind of text a student can process at that time of the year. And then the writing assessment is a curriculum-embedded assessment that was adopted with our Lucy Calkins units of study in writing. Students take an on-demand writing assessment three times a year in one each in each text type. So there's a narrative on demand in October, and then an information and opinion on demand in February and May. And then finally, in that district common assessment category, are also curriculum embedded assessments that we have redesigned. They came from our Bridges mathematics adoption. The Bridges adoption provided us with quarterly assessments, and our teachers asked that we redesign those into trimester assessments so that it fit our teaching schedule. So they were redesigned last summer by grade level teachers to provide three, again, opportunities to measure student progress against the mathematics that have been taught in that trimester. And then below that, you'll see another category, which Kim also referred to, classroom assessments. And in elementary, they've all been report card aligned. And what that means is that these are optional assessments that teachers can use in order to provide them with grading information. And you'll notice that they're given at similar times of year, because that's when our trimesters end, in November, February, and May at the end of the year. These assessments, again, were designed in part by curriculum that our teachers might be using. The reading foundational skills come from the Word Study program. The standard 9 assessments are meant to be SBAC-like tasks, so that students get that experience of taking a research and reading, writing and research assessment throughout the year. And then finally, the Bridges unit assessments, and you can think of those as chapter assessments. They go along with each unit of study. We did the same thing for a fourth grade student, and the reason that I'm sharing a different grade level with you is that each grade level is slightly different. They're similar, but they are slightly different. And what's especially different about our third through sixth grade students is they also participate in the SBAC state testing. So you'll notice at the very top of this calendar, there is the SBAC assessment in ELA and mathematics. And that's just a once-a-year assessment that happens sometime between mid-April and the end of the school year, coming right up. In fact, I think some students started testing this week. If you look in the next district common assessment category, again, there's a common assessment in reading, writing, and mathematics. The reading assessment is not the BAS, but an online assessment SRI that provides a Lexile level, again, to determine the student's text complexity level. And in writing, the assessments are the same in all of our K-6 classrooms. They're on demands. They're curriculum embedded with our writing program.
Can I ask you a question?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I think I'm right on this, but I might not be. Are there students in, say, the third, fourth grade, students who are at risk who might be given the BAS as well?
The BAS is an optional assessment for students in third through sixth grade. And the way that we use that is if a student scores below basic on the SRI, then we look at that as we need some additional information on that student. The BAS is a more diagnostic assessment where you actually sit one-on-one with a student and are able to analyze reading behaviors and diagnose reading behaviors that can then lead to the instruction that you might provide, especially for at-risk readers.
Thank you.
Yeah, I have a question also on the BAS. It's K through 3, correct? And then it's an alternative assessment for 4, 5, 6?
It's a K-2 assessment.
K-2, okay. Mm-hmm,
K-2, and then 3, 6, our third graders jump to the SRI.
Okay. And when you say teacher time on that test is 20 minutes and student time is 25 minutes, but each one of those is given individually to students, so it would be that time times the number of students in the class. Is that correct?
That's correct.
All right, thank you.
For the student time.
For the student time,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
For the teacher time, in this instance, the teacher time was actually about what do I do with the information after I've given it.
Okay,
so
great.
The multiply by class size would be the student time.
Okay, thank you.
And in fact, let's talk about that for a minute. When you asked at the board study session to estimate some times that students and teachers might spend on these, we provided you with some preliminary estimates, but I don't know if you remember when you would ask me a question about kindergarten BAS or second grade BAS, I said, well, it really depends because it's different giving the BAS to a kindergarten student than it would be a second grade student or even a fourth or fifth or sixth grade student. So we actually did a survey that we sent out to our 200-plus elementary teachers, and we asked them 23 questions, actually, about all the different assessments, times that students would spend and time that teachers would spend. And from the 113 responses that we received from our teachers, which was, I thought, quite a few people responded to the survey, we presented to you here the median times. So these are actual times in almost every case that a teacher responded to that. So that's how we derive the numbers for teachers and students. So back to fourth grade, just to kind of finish that up, a fourth grade student would also have that math trimester assessment from the Bridges program. That's part of our curriculum embedded assessments. And then the classroom assessment part at the bottom there looks a little different. Teachers created some ELA trimester benchmark assessments to measure some of the reading standards. And then they also participate in the Standard 9, which is like an SBAC reading, research, and writing assessment, similar to the performance tasks they'll take in the spring. And then the Bridges unit assessments, which are chapter assessments, as we discussed. I think the other grade levels were in your packet. They look similar, but like I said, each grade level has just a tiny bit of variance in that. The next slide that I'd like to share with you is the other information that you requested during our board study session. And what you see here is a K-6 chart, and it includes the assessments that you saw on the calendars for each grade level. What's different about this chart is that we went ahead and extended the amount of time for students. This is an estimated student assessment time for each instance of the assessment. So if I go back and look at that, you'll see that students take the SRI 4 times in fourth grade, or the writing on demand occurs 3 times. So what we did is we took those estimated times from the left-hand column there, and then we combine them into what would the year-long profile look like, which was one of the requests that you made. And then if you look to the far right on this chart, you'll see a total number of minutes per year. and then you'll see the percent of annual instructional minutes, which was another request that you had asked for. So if you look there, it varies by grade level, both the total number of minutes and the percent of annual instructional minutes, but ranges from 1.5% in kindergarten to, I guess, 3.6% in fifth grade. So fifth grade, usually you would think it would just graduate up each grade level. The fifth grade has a little additional science assessment that they take that's a leftover from the CST time. So that's what bumps their numbers up a little bit higher than fourth and sixth grade. And then we did the same thing or something similar for the estimated amount of time that teachers would spend grading. And again, this is from the T column on the first two charts for second and fourth grade. And these are the times that teachers reported processing assessment information. And then on the far right for this, we just totaled the minutes and the number of hours that would be included. Of course, teachers spend a lot of time working to assess their students. It's really what drives instruction. So this is really just a snapshot of the amount of time they might spend looking at student work and making instructional decisions as to what to do next best for that student. I think we're going to launch to secondary and what their chart looks like before I invite Neil up. Are there any additional questions for elementary?
Yeah, could. So I just did some quick calculations. I'm not a math guy. But what it looked to me like, for example, 2.3% of the year, I figured 240 minutes, which is, I guess, an average amount of time that our younger students spend. So it comes out, for example, I think in first grade, it's somewhere around five days of instructional time that's spent on that. One of the things, though, that I hear from teachers is, well, first of all, what strikes me with this is the concentration of the assessments throughout the year. So the assessments are concentrated in November, February, and April, May, something like that, aligning with the trimesters. Mm-hmm. And I know that's really crunch time for the teachers and the students. So that's one observation I had. The other observation is that when I, though, talk to teachers, what they're telling me is that they might be spending 2 weeks prior to report cards just doing testing, assessments, trying to get all that stuff done. And the concern, and I know that's reflected, and I really, by the way, I want to compliment you and Amy and the principals particularly on the amount of research that you did and the transparency with the discussions you had with the teachers. And I got that from teachers that they felt really those were good discussions that they had at the site levels. I know this is what we're getting from the reports, but again, anecdotally, what I'm hearing is that it's really taking a lot more time than that during the instructional period, and teachers' concern about loss of instructional minutes. So I wanted to share that with everybody here.
If I could just share with something to go along with that, I noticed at my own site this year that our fall trimester was very indicative of that kind of a situation. But as teachers had time on the front, and our complete assessment system that you see here was developed right along with our standards-based report card. Mm-hmm. So being in our second year and having many assessments in place this year that we didn't have last year, that teachers worked over the summer to put some things in place, I noticed trimester two was a little bit different because they had some time on the front end of trimester two to kind of backwards map their entire trimester and better schedule things so that it wasn't crashing all on the same day or all on the same 2 days right before report cards. And I know that the teachers at my site felt that planning time on the front end of the trimester really helped alleviate that. But the reality is, just as you said, that there are a lot of assessments at report card time.
Yeah, and just again looking at looking at this, the third, I think I looked at either third or fourth grade, it's actually get the 240 minutes for the day, which is, you know, I'm assuming that's about what a school day, what the instructional period of a school day lasts. It's, and again, I could be wrong, it's actually about 8 days out of the year. And I think, and I just, again, I'm commenting when it's eight full days, but what we're seeing is the effect of that in shorter periods of classroom time. So I'll be interested to see what our next steps are. Thank you.
Okay. Well, let me invite Neela.
Thank you. Good evening, everybody. So I'm going to walk us through a similar structure for secondary as Darla presented for elementary. So with that, we'll just jump right into it. So this is a seventh grade student assessment calendar with time estimates. And so our seventh grade students do take SBAC. And so similar to the way Darla presented, we have S and T there to represent student and teacher time. Our seventh grade students also take district common assessments. So they do in ELA, they take four common assessments. And you can see a little bit of those windows are a little bit long there because it varies by classroom. So there's windows for administering the assessment, and they can vary somewhat. In mathematics, our common assessments are the SVMI performance tasks. SVMI stands for the Silicon Valley Mathematics Initiative, and there are five of those in seventh grade, as well as time estimates. And then for our other assessments in seventh grade, all of our seventh grade students do take the MDTP as part of math placement. And so with that, I will go to the 11th grade assessment calendar. So 11th grade is actually the only grade in high school where our students take SBAC. And so that is reflected here. Our 9th, 10th, and 12th graders do not take SBAC. For district common assessments, so for ELA, our 11th graders do take two common assessments, and you'll notice that row kind of looks a little bit different. So ELA common assessment at the high school level, this year our teachers are currently in a planning and pilot year, and so the reason that is kind of a wide range there is that as they've been planning and piloting common assessment at the high school level, the administration of those assessments has varied widely across the two sites. And so that's what that aims to reflect. For our SVMI tasks in 11th grade, assuming that the 11th grader is in Algebra 2, some of our 11th graders are not, but if we make that assumption, there would be, again, five performance tasks. And then for our 11th graders, of course, there are definitely other assessments. So many of our 11th grade students take AP exams, and we aimed to capture that there. And then they're also taking, on an ongoing basis, SAT or ACT examinations. And again, in a similar structure, we have student time and teacher time there. And then just as Darla presented, that's for one assessment. Okay, so now we're talking annually. So now we aggregate the information in a similar way to look at estimated student assessment time across annually. And so here we have our district common assessments. So you'll see ELA common assessment. You'll see our math performance tasks, math placement for 7th and 8th grade, SBAC and science. So our 10th graders are still taking CST science, so that's reflected there, as well as AP exams. Now, with AP exams, we kind of had to make some assumptions here because students will vary in terms of how many AP exams they take. For our 10th graders, we assumed one, and for our 11th and 12th graders, we assumed two. And so I just wanted to be transparent about the assumption that we made there. And then there's totals in terms of minutes, and then percentages in terms of annual instructional minutes. And you can see that varies. I should also point out that there are ranges here. So we obtained these estimates from our teaching staff. And when our teaching staff got back to us, there were ranges. And so we presented that range here. But you can see it ranges anywhere from 0.3 to 2.4% of annual instructional minutes. Oops, wrong way. There we go. And so the last thing we did is we did estimates for teacher scoring time, again, obtaining these estimates from our teaching staff. This is really district common assessments because there's no additional time for the state assessments for our teachers. And so we aggregated that information in terms of total minutes as well as total hours. And a couple interpretation points that I would point out about this information. So at secondary, those total estimates are really, in ELA and math, are split across two teachers. So I wanted to be transparent about that. I also want to point out that, and this is something Darla said to reiterate this, that these are estimates of required assessments. Our teachers work incredibly hard in the classroom assessing students on the spot using formative measures, and that the amount of time that they spend there is not reflected here. So that is that was the secondary part of the presentation. And if you have questions, I can try to take them now, or I can turn things over to Amy.
I think we look good.
Okay, thank you.
Good evening. I would like to take this opportunity to provide you with a little bit more information and thinking surrounding elementary assessment. Elementary assessment, as I believe you know, has evolved dramatically over the past 4 years. And I think this is really due to a couple factors. First of all, of course, the adoption of the Common Core and the instructional materials and assessments that went with that adoption. And secondly, as we all know, is the implementation of our standards-based grading in elementary. The impact of our work in elementary assessment can be observed at each of our elementary schools. And I think it's important to note that we now have assessments in place that align with our standards and with our curriculum. We have expectations of student learning at each grade level that are clear and articulated. And our teachers are using the same assessments across the district in all of our classrooms. This was a pretty big feat. As we transition to this new world of standards-based grading, we've experienced some growing pains. Addressing and solving problems from our old system brought some new challenges for our teachers in standards-based grading. We recently asked our teachers, as you received many pages in your packet, to provide feedback not only on the time estimates for the assessments, but also to reflect on the benefits, the challenges, and offer some suggestions for where we might go from here. We received an abundance of information and feedback from our teachers, and I will tell you, overall, it was very positive. We were very happy to see what they had to tell us. The benefits specifically, if I kind of do an overview from the results from the 10 schools, said to me that our teachers want us to know that for students, they are now provided accurate feedback on their academic performance and progress from the previous trimester. This provides students with motivation and encouragement. Students are now able to use this current performance to set specific goals for their continued learning. For our teachers, they're now provided with specific individual and class performance indicators and are now able to report accurately student progress as well as determine next steps for instruction, differentiation, and grouping. Our parents are now provided an accurate picture of student performance based on evidence. Parents are able to see their child's growth, strengths, and next steps for learning. Parents understand that in San Luis Coastal, a 3 represents the same rigor from class to class and school to school. It's pretty monumental. Challenges are all about time. It was said earlier by Mr. Unger, and we certainly agree with that. The challenges involved in time of taking away of instructional time for students and time for teachers to score and then with some of them process these assessments is great. Suggestions that came in related to the time issues have been provided by our sites and are going to be reviewed or have already begun to be reviewed and prioritized so we can develop our plan for our next steps in strengthening not only the effectiveness but the efficiency of our elementary assessment system. Our next 3 steps will be to do the following. We're going to be bringing our elementary grading consortium together this spring to discuss specific ideas for improvement. They'll be reviewing the results of our teacher report card assessment survey as well as our parent survey. Combine those efforts, make decisions about how to improve, how to revise, how to streamline our current system. Secondly, we'll bring in grade level revision teams this summer to revise our current assessments based on our teacher feedback. And thirdly, we'll continue to research and pilot new and more efficient assessments as they become available. There is much to celebrate with the progress our district has made in keeping our purposes for assessment in mind while developing an assessment system to best measure student achievement and progress. There's also still much work left to be done. We look forward to working with our teachers and our principals to improve our assessment system now and in the future. And we are available for any questions you might have.
Dr. Eisenhower Rogers.
Mrs. Shield, this is going to be kind of a lightning round because what I noticed is among the principals and teachers' comments, some things, there were some commonalities, and so I wanted to ask you about those things, whether you saw some themes surface, and so that was those were things we will attend to first, maybe. But at first, I just want to say how thoughtful the process was. It was I hope it was as positive an experience as it appears to be on paper for these teachers and their principals, because there's a lot of rich data that came out of that and a lot of rich information for us.
I think the most important part is I think it was a very thoughtful process back at sites where teachers got together with their principals and really got the message, we really want to know. And this is not a new message, but it was, no, we're going to change things up a little bit. We're going to stop and take the time to have this discussion because we care. Our school board cares. ISLA cares. We want to get this right. We've done too much work. And when I say we, I mean our teachers, our writing teams, our development teams, our K-6 assessment TOSA, who I certainly must acknowledge in leading a great deal of this work. We've come too far. But what we know is in that change process, you know, you go through some rocky times to get to that place where it's norm. And we're getting there, but we're still making the tweaks.
So one expression that I saw come up in a few different reports had to do with, could we have more curriculum-embedded testing? What would that look like? How would we do that?
An example of curriculum-embedded testing, and Darla, if you want to add to that, feel free to, would be our writing on-demand assessments. It's connected to our current writing program, so what they do is not out there that has nothing to do with what they're learning in the classroom. It's directly related. Another example is our Math Corner benchmark assessments that are in place. They are directly connected and aligned to the Bridges program. One of the suggestions, and I put it in the trends here, from a couple school sites, which, you know, there were a lot of very diverse ideas, but I believe there were two sites that wanted us to think about using the chapter tests, of which I believe there are five or six, versus the benchmark trimester assessments. The problem with that potentially is they test different things, and because that curriculum is so rich and dense, we need to just make sure that that's a good option and makes sense. So we're going to get people working on that to look at the pros and cons of that.
So it makes me think that maybe in the future, learning and testing will almost be a seamless process that will just go on a daily basis.
I will speak to another trend that I think came up is the idea of breaking down some of these assessments throughout the trimester, and Darla did allude to that. I think our school sites and our teachers that got ahead of that backwards mapping process and really thought through at the beginning of the trimester, and I will tell you we had some sites that actually did that this summer as part of their summer work. They developed their units for the year, and then they put the assessments in and figured out when they were going to teach, when they were going to assess, what that was going to look like. More of a cycle of data assessment teaching. If you do leave it all till the end, it's a lot of assessment. It's a lot of assessment on students, and it's a lot of assessment analysis for our teachers. I think some of it needs to be left till the very end. Some of it can be placed throughout the trimester.
Thank you.
Mr. Quesmer.
Yeah, I have a question on the English Language Arts Common Assessments and the Embedded Common Assessment Planning and Pilot 2 Common Assessments. Do those are those writing assessments, or are they more general than that?
Sounds like you're talking about high school.
Yes.
Yeah, they are.
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I'm
they
sorry.
Are writing. Secondary. They are writing assessments.
Okay. Are those piloted both, or I should say, all three of the district high schools?
They've been primarily occurring at San Luis High and at Morro Bay High, but they have been different assessments at the two high schools.
Two high schools. Is there an intention to pick two that, when you finally settle on the assessment, that will be administered at both schools?
That is definitely the intention.
Okay, great, thank you.
Okay, and then Ms. Dronger.
First of all, thank you, Amy, for sharing that the information. And again, I want to really compliment you and the principals and the school staffs for the rich discussions they had about this and how that was reflected in the executive summaries that we received. I think that was very helpful and important. I think if there's one thing that came out of No Child Left Behind, it was the notion of assessments. And not necessarily in a bad way, because what it did was it forced our country and forced our, you know, our state and our district to really look at the achievement gap, which we now know exists. I think, as I remember when we first got on the board, we didn't have this kind of data. You know, we thought that every child was doing well. We didn't know that we had subgroups of kids that really needed a lot of extra work, and the data has clearly showed that and guided our instruction and guided what we've done, and I appreciate that work that everybody is engaged in. It's a lot of work, and I laud you for looking at that and for really being open, you and everybody being open to looking at what are efficient ways that we can get the information we need to guide instruction, to tell us what's going on with kids, to look at the good things and the warts and all. So I think that to me is really good news that we're looking at that we've heard what the teacher said, and we'll see what the next steps are. So thank you for that. I too, kind of like Catherine, I tried to look at some themes of what I saw. And the concerns I heard about were, again, that the time to assess, as it seems to currently happen, is that it's a loss of instructional time. And it looked to me like it's pretty labor-intensive, especially in the lower grades. You know, I know that we're looking at median times for the BAS, but I know that it depends on where, if we get a kid immediately, then we can get them right there and we can zoom through the test. But if the teacher guesses wrong on where the student's level is, it can take a lot longer than that. What I've been getting is that the BAS gives really good information, but it's extremely time consuming. But the data that comes out of it is so rich and helpful to the teachers. I heard some concerns from teachers about the developmental appropriateness of some of the assessments, and I'm sure you'll hear that too. And I guess one of the interesting things that I saw, and I may have missed this comment in there, but I didn't see anybody talking about how the assessments led to those rich conversations between teachers about instruction. And I'm wondering if I missed that, because that's something that I had a hope for when we did the Monday teacher collaboration time, was that we would have ways for teachers to be able to talk about their instruction and what's working and what's not working. So I read through that. It seemed like it wasn't there. I don't know if I missed it or not, but I would certainly like to see all the other things we do lead toward those professional conversations to help not only kids grow, but teachers grow in their instructional practice as well.
If I may respond, I think we first saw really the strongest beginnings of that was through our writing scoring days. Mm-hmm. where starting, I want to say about 3 years ago, we brought a grade level group of teachers together. And I think what was important about it is not that they were looking at an assessment, but they were looking at real, authentic student work and looking at where their children were working, looking at where other students from across the district were, looking at strengths, looking along a progression of learning and writing and seeing what those next steps might be. Those conversations were deep and they were rich and they were powerful. With the more current issues of number of subs and number of days teachers have been out of the classrooms, we've adjusted and modified that, where our teachers are out just for one of those scoring days, and then they're doing that scoring back at site. I would venture to predict that those conversations are still taking place. They're more site-based and not district level, but it's when it's whether it be an assessment or just a sample of a real student work sample, that those kinds of conversations that we're looking at where kids are at and where we want to go next with them is critical, and it's happening. I absolutely know that that's happening across our district, and I don't know that that per se came up on this assessment or on the survey, but I can certainly tell you it's happening across the district.
That's great. And the other comment I want to make is I'm really proud of our district for coming up with a standards-based report card. Yeah. I know that it's much more difficult to get that data, but to think that a teacher at Del Mar is looking at the same things as a teacher at Los Ranchos, right, and that those scores really mean something, I think is a phenomenal task that you guys engaged in. And I guess my ask would be that we make it, that we continue with the transparency and the discussions with the teachers about this and make it real clear that, at least from my perspective, that this is important, yeah, and that these are important conversations, and that the teachers feel engaged in it, because I know sometimes they don't. And I really, again, just appreciate the work you guys did. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Questionberry, before I take you, I'm going to go to the public. Is there any member of the public that would like to speak to this item? Okay, seeing no one then, Mr. Questionberry.
Well, I just want to concur with Mr. Unger's praise for this effort here. This is, to me, it shows the willingness of instructional services to listen to the teachers and get their feedback and work with them. The reason I asked the question about the language arts assessments at the high school level is that we did used to have days when we did get together and look at writing assessments and calibrate and see what the different sites were doing. I think that's a valuable thing. And even more so now that we get the data, that the teachers get the data back for their students, and that's why I asked that question. That is not currently happening at the secondary level, or is it? Is there still a district writing assessment where the teachers come together and
at the high school level?
At the high school
level, no.
No. So it's been gone for a while, obviously. I'm getting further and further away from the reality of what's going on there. So it's not. Are we looking at that as part of the two embedded assessments that we're thinking about giving?
Absolutely. The goal is to have it common and to have common conversations.
Great. And the other thing is, as far as the teacher collaboration time, I know that back in the day, it's now some 6 years distant, we did have some very challenging conversations and about the kinds of assessments that we were trying to implement at Morrowway High School. There was some kind of controversy, there was some sharing, there was some cooperation. So I think it's a valuable time, and I think it's well used. I can't say that for every site, but I think so at Morrowway High. That was true, and I think it continues to be true. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, then, if there's no additional comment, thank you for your hard work on this item and for being so responsive to the questions that the board asked in the study session. Okay, now I'm going to be confused, but I'm figuring it out. I'm going up to... Have we done public comment? Okay. Then we're at public comment. I believe we have one request to speak.
Yes, we do. Mrs. Devitt.
Mrs. Devitt, you're on.
Thank you. Mary Jo Devitt, San Luis Obispo. This evening I want to share a story with you that I read not long ago. One day a wise woman was walking along a mountainside and she came to a stream. And in the stream she saw a very valuable stone. So she picked it up, put it in her bag, and continued on her journey. In a short time, she came upon a hungry traveler. She opened her bag to share her food with him, and he saw the valuable stone, so he asked the woman to give it to him, and without hesitation, she did. He went happily along his way, knowing that the worth of the stone would sustain him for the rest of his life. A few days later, he went looking for the wise woman, and when he found her, he said to her, "I have been thinking, and I'm going to return this valuable stone to you with the hope that you will give me something that is more valuable." And she asked, "What is that?" He replied, "Will you please give to me what is within you that made it possible for you to, without hesitation, give me this valuable stone? For me, education is that valuable stone. Our students are the hungry traveler. And those, certainly including all of you, who are involved in giving without hesitation that education to our students, have within you what the wise woman had within her." One evening during dinner, when Jim, my brother, and I were in college, our mother said to us, "Your education is the only thing you have that can never be taken from you. With the help of your dedicated teachers, you have earned it, and it belongs to you." Our father added, and his parents came to this country in 1904, 7 months before our father was born, from Italy, said, "Sempre, always. It is your tesoro, treasure." So Jim and I entered the field of education. I, as you know, as an elementary teacher, and Jimmy as a university professor. Our chosen levels of teaching represent the alpha and the omega of an education. Throughout my 74 years, I have known many joys. Among the greatest, and I think perhaps the most rewarding, is that of being a substitute teacher in this district. 35 years ago this month, I began for the second time to substitute teach in this district. The first time was in 1965, before at least one of you was even born. I do not want to substitute as long as I'm able. I want to substitute as long as I'm able to do it well. When the time comes, and it certainly will, that I am no longer able to do it well, I hope that I have the wisdom to know it and the graciousness to accept it. Can I just finish off? May I? I'm thankful to all of you and to many former school boards and members of central administration for allowing me the privilege of being a substitute teacher in this district. It is an honor and a pleasure. I shall be grateful sempre because it is mia tesoro. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone who did not submit a written request but would like to address the board during public comment? Seeing no one, then we'll move on to the business and budget update. Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, so a couple items. I actually met with all the different union groups on Monday afternoon to discuss insurance rates and kind of the looking at all the insurance plans. We missed you. And so just for the board's information, that conversation, how it kind of, you know, it's getting all the groups together, looking at the plans. And so we haven't really changed any of our plans in several years. We changed prescription coverage a few years ago to kind of put it in a in-between place in terms of cost, overall cost, which makes it fair for kind of all sides. But out of that meeting, basically, rates are coming up for San Luis Coastal Unified School District, and mainly it's just the health portion of our rates because we also have dental and vision, but it's about a 4.4% increase. So overall, so that's about 2.2% for employees and 2.2% for the district. So that was part of the conversation that we had with the union groups about the fact that based on the plans and personnel costs, that as these plans go up, not only does it affect the employee, which you've heard me say several times, but it also is increased cost on the districts. That's kind of just built in increases, kind of like a step in column almost. So some of those plans range from our highest plan, our 100% kind of Cadillac plan, is basically about $396 for the employee and increase next year. So that's annually. That's annually, so $396 annually for that for the plan, which also means that the district pitches in $396, of course. And then the lowest 80% plan is roughly about $252 for the employee as well as for the district. So it varies kind of along that scale. We offer, of course, four different, the 100% plan, 90% plan, 80% plan, and then kind of a lower level 80% plan, as well as CISC allows us to offer those kind of Affordable Care Act, really inexpensive, almost a catastrophic plan for employees. So it's, again, there were no changes there. We just kind of talked about why we are where we're at, why we offer kind of a variety of plans to employees, talked a little bit about CAP and what that means, those types of things, and why it's come up. And so that was, it was just a good discussion. I think it was informative for the union groups, and so I asked them to kind of go out and share that information of why we are where we're at and in terms of it, because I think it's important for our all of our classified certificate staff and management staff to kind of know why we have the plans we do, the, you know, what it means, how we came to those plans. And so it really boils down to risk in terms of the cost. So there's a variety of different 100% plans. There's a variety of 90% plans, a variety of 80. But the question is, do you want, it's cheaper, but then you take on the risk of potentially having to pay the deductible. So for singles, the deductible, normally they'll, a single person will make out no matter what. But for a family, depending on if they had costs, it could be more expensive over the course of a year. So those are the, it's kind of, again, what boiled down was a good conversation. Outside of that, we do have some union groups that are looking at disability insurance. So currently, SEIU has SDI insurance that they all, the entire group, pays for and is part of it. So they're interested in looking at potentially other possible plans that may be less inexpensive, maybe even better coverage. So we kind of threw that out to the unions. If they wanted to take part in those discussions, great. If not, no problem. For teachers, they offer what's called the standard, which is kind of that same disability type of insurance. Some teachers take it, some don't. So these are things that the entire group would have to decide to do together. So the more groups do it, of course, the cheaper the potential coverage would be for all of the groups. This is not at a district expense. This would be the employee's expense. And so we've kind of left it out there. We're going to bring in a couple groups, let them just, you know, let them kind of hear about it, decide what they want to do, and then I'll let the board know and report back. Okay?
Okay. Thank you. Ed Services update, Mr. Robinette.
Thank you. So we, right before spring break, finished our outreach and presentations for the Local Control Accountability Plan. The parent and staff surveys are still online, and we'll continue to add new thoughts until we actually get the plan written. Our next step really at this point is to synthesize the common threads we've heard from students, staff, parents, and public, and attempts to see how those ideas fit in with our focus areas and direction, and that will become a public board item in coming weeks, kind of that analysis and synthesis of the input. Then we will be writing a draft of our plan for the board and public consumption, consistent and tied with our budget projections for the next year. Also, during the spring break, our super talented Skills USA students went off to the state finals and once again qualified for national finals in many areas from both Slo High and Morro Bay High School. And then we took plenty of golds and silvers, but the gold medal winners, which are tops in the entire state of California, will go on to the finals in Louisville, Kentucky. So I know we'll probably have those students here at some time in the future, but I do want it to make note. Ben Hurley in automotive service technology, Wyatt Judge, Thomas Phelan, and Jacob Grant in metal fabrication, Johnny Rigetti for welding, Scott Manning for technical computer applications. Those are all SLO High students. And from Morrowbie High School, Victoria White for pin design. And the finals take place in late June after school is out. The California Department of Education finally issued a legal advisory regarding the 2013 Assembly Bill 1266, which we brought a board policy forward because it became law in January of 2014. It's the law that basically extended all forms of anti-discrimination measures to transgender youth. And so the good news is that this legal advisory is absolutely consistent with all of our practices and the ARs we wrote and our application of the law. We probably don't need to look at any revisions. That law basically pretty much guaranteed two things, that anyone can participate in sex-segregated school programs and activities, including athletic teams and competitions, regardless of gender, and that secondly, that the use of facilities, any facilities, locker rooms, bathrooms, consistent with a gender identity, regardless of a gender assigned at birth. And so the advisory is doing just what our practice is, to suggest a dialogue with students as how to best meet individual needs, ensuring privacy to the gender identity in all our records. It reaffirms what we've believed, that we do not need to set up gender-neutral restroom facilities or changing rooms. In fact, it states that the requirement to use those is, in fact, a denial of equal access. It doesn't mean you can't have those, but it is certainly not a requirement or expectation. And there are some cautions that we may need to look into, such as anything that looks as if a gender-based dress code, or even things like lining up boy-girl to go to assemblies or things like that. So there might be some practices we need to look at, but it looks like we're very consistent with what the legal advisory is suggesting. And that's what I have.
Thank you. Any board comment? Okay. Measure D update. Would that be you, Mr. Pinkerton?
Yes. So I'm going to have Kim pull up all of our bids are now kind of beginning to be put out by Mr. Palazzo, his department. And so I wanted to show you kind of our online site that has been developed with ASO Reprographics that has the actual bid documents for. Kim can pull it up. Hopefully it'll show up. It's okay. You can just go to ASAP Reprographics. Can you pull it up at all or no? Okay. So basically, Kelly, Mandy, Anthony have worked with this ASRO Reprographics company that puts all of our documents basically online. So we're developing this online bid system. We're going to have all of our CUPCA bids, all of our purchasing. All of those things are going to be part of our both our district website as long as ASAP Reprographics. So when one of our bids, like the pool bid, is out now for Morrowbie High School. So when that bid goes out, it goes live. ASAP Reprographics puts it out. They send it to the different union groups that they have to send it to, you know, labor groups, I should say, in terms of getting the information out. And then we can actually see who picks up those, how it moves forward. They can get all the documentation. If they have questions that come to the district, basically we get them. We're able to then put them all together, issue a response to all of the potential bidders. So all of that kind of ties in to this great product process that I wanted to give kudos to Kelly, our admin assistant who works with Anthony in getting this established. So it's been a lot of work, but it's exciting. So this is just kind of a page. So if you go to ASAP Reprographics, you click on San Luis Coastal Unified School District, and it has our first three projects there. So all of our projects that are going out to bid will be included in this. You can click on – I mean, you can get the exact details. You can look through the documents. But it's just we're getting it out there. We're, kudos to them for having this – just be out for everyone to be able to see and to try to get as many bidders, as many people as possible. So, great thing. Dr. Prater, myself, met with Stephanie Bruteau and Mr. Plaza today to talk about our Measure D communication plans, kind of, hey, all of this stuff is hitting the street. What's our next steps? How are we going to get this information out? So we're going to be establishing some dates for us to have both ribbon cuttings as well as groundbreaking ceremonies. We're going to be working on our Measure D timelines to really show people kind of how Measure D is going to lay out over the next few years. All of that information that will be part of the website will also be tied into our summer mailer that goes out to the public. So really ramping up, showing everybody where we're headed, what's happening. And so it's an exciting time to really get started. Lastly, I'm excited. We have some new furniture that came into C.L. Smith, as well as Hawthorne. We've had some at Del Mar for a little bit, as well as Baywood. And so what we're doing is we're trying some different furniture ideas for students. So some stand-up desks, some sit-down desks, some different types of arrangements, seating arrangements that teachers can use. And so our initial, even some of the desks you can write on, like with whiteboard markers. So you can do project, do things. So if you get a chance to pop out to one of those schools, Hawthorne, C.O. Smith, where they just recently got those particular desks that I'm talking about, it'll be good for us to try those with kids and see what works and do the stand-up desk. Do we need stools for kids, or is it still just okay to sit, stand up? Are the kids using those, or they like to sit down more? And kind of getting that feedback from teachers and kids prior to us making wholesale huge purchases in terms of furniture. So it's really interesting. I think we're going to put together, I think it would be important for us to put together something, work with the Tribune to kind of talk about the impact on that furniture may have on instruction. So using some of these kind of test cases, pilots at these schools. So it's an exciting time, to think about instruction as well as the construction and Measure D progress that we're going to make.
Okay. Thank you. I don't see any questions, so we'll move on. We have a public hearing. The initial bargaining proposal from Service Employees International Union. Mrs. Newland.
So this was the initial proposal that was presented to you at the last board meeting, and so this is an opportunity for the public to weigh in on this subject before it appears later under action and consent.
Okay. We'll open the hearing then to the public. Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to this item? Seeing no one then, we'll bring it back to the board and we will address it later in the agenda. Item 8.02, energy service contract for High Bay Lighting. That would be Mr. Palazzo.
Yeah, good evening.
Good evening.
As part of an energy services contract that we're entering into with Rossi and Carr, we need to have a public hearing on that item, which will then be addressed a little bit later in the action and consent. And discussion.
So then I will open a public hearing on the energy service contract for High Bay Lighting, which is in response to an energy audit at our high schools performed by Avalo Partners.
Do you want me to give a little more info now, or do you want to save it for... We can do it now, we can do it later.
Why don't you give it to us? Give it to us now.
Okay.
Oh, okay. I guess we got our orders from headquarters. Hearing nothing from the public, then we will close the hearing and move on. We have a resolution.
The next item on the agenda.
Yeah.
Okay, we have a resolution, number 12-15-16, energy services agreement.
Yeah, so a little over a year ago, we started down a process to put together an energy efficiency package as part of our Proposition 39 funding. So we're getting about $350,000 a year over a five-year period, or just about $300,000 a year, I should say, over a five-year period to implement energy efficiency measures district-wide. We did an overall audit within the whole district, determined that LED lighting was one of the main measures that we could undertake that was going to give us the best bang for our buck district-wide. And so we set out to put together the first project under our Prop 39 program
which was our high bay lighting at our gyms, because they were in the, if any of you have been to any of our gyms, you turn the lights on, you come back an hour later, and they finally are kicked on, and then you have to wear special glasses so you can see through the yellow fog. And so that was one of the best bang for our buck kind of or measures that we could implement district-wide. So at the time, we had a fairly, you know, easy use of the leaseback method, delivery method for construction. So we started to move down the path. We put out an RFQ for contractors to implement some of this high bay lighting project. We did interviews. We reviewed the submittals, did interviews, etc., and then selected Rossi & Carr to be the provider of those services. Well, as we were bringing that contract to the board, the Davis case came out, kind of put leaseback in a different light. And so we had to kind of backpedal and work with our attorneys and Mr. Holcomb to kind of put together a different method of contracting, which is actually under Ed Code or Public Contract Code 4217.10, allows us to enter into an agreement with an entity to put together an energy efficiency project. And so we're able to use this method of contracting in the contract or the government code to enter into that agreement to not lose all the work we had done with Rossi & Carr up to that point. So we'd gone through a process, we'd worked with them to get kind of the project developed and underway. And then the brakes got put on because of the Davis case. And then this was an avenue that we were able to use to kind of pick up where we'd left off and enter into a different type of contracting method. So as part of that, there's, you know, public hearing, public comment period, et cetera, and then adoption of a resolution making findings that the work that Rossi & Carr is going to do will actually pay off over the course of the life of the product that they're installing, which is just between 10 and 13 years in this particular case, depending on which one we're looking at. And so today what you have in front of you is a resolution making those findings and authorizing staff to enter into a contract with Rossi & Carr to make this high bay lighting project happen.
Okay, then let me go to the public. Is there anyone from the public that wishes to speak to this resolution? Seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board. Mr. Questenberry.
Well, I just want to point out to the public and to my former students that your use of an hour for the lights to come on and the blinding yellow lighter, just an example of hyperbole. But they did take quite some time, I agree, having turned those lights on and off over the years.
It's just a little literary license.
That's right, absolutely.
Yeah, it's teachable
very,
moment, Jim.
It's very effective. Good. It's very effective. My question was more on a particular in there, and it was about the – I didn't realize we had the – I had forgotten that we'd had the Prop 30 funds. So we're going to realize these savings almost immediately once the lighting is installed. It's not a, you know, 6-year payback or what have you.
Oh, correct? No, we start seeing day one. We start seeing a reduce in our electrical bill. It'll just take a duration to pay back the initial investment. Now, you know, the analysis only takes what we're paying for power today. It doesn't really take into account assuming power prices go up. So it should actually be a little shorter payback than what we've calculated.
Mr. Buckley.
Yeah, I think this may be unfair at this point, but so as we switch to LEDs, we've experienced savings, but in this huge shift that we're going to be making in the gyms, is there any way to estimate the savings cost beyond the fog and beyond the time?
If we can, $1,500.
Yeah, it was between, depending on which. Right. Of the different sites, which Jim
right.
were talking about,
yep.
that was kind of in that report. I'm sorry, I can't
You're
remember.
Right. Thank you.
Okay. Now, this is only the first phase of this, and so we've entered into discussions with Dave Houghton, who's done all of our audits and our energy analysis, who's also worked with Rossi & Carr on this particular analysis. That next summer, we're probably looking at doing a lot of our, if not all of our, elementary schools' lighting. Kind of really going in and blowing and going over a summer period and really knocking it out because we have the funds available from the Prop 39, putting in all the applications to get those grants and get that money rolling our way and get those projects done so that we can start seeing that savings immediately. So that'll make a huge dent in our light bill when we go to these LED lights. And I don't know if any of you have seen the few that we actually were able to install last summer under – different contracting method. Just incredible feedback from the sites in terms of Laguna Middle School, Los Osos Middle School, and Morro Bay High School, the old gym at Morro Bay High School. Now all have it. And we've got control systems.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
Laguna Middle School, Los Osos Middle School, and the old gym at Morro Bay High School all have had these replaced now. We were able to do that under a different contracting method.
That was going to be my question about the old gym at Morro Bay, so thank you. Mrs. Sheffer.
If I was simply going to, if there was no further discussion, move.
I wanted to ask a couple of questions.
But Mr. Millar.
So I just want to make sure I understand what we're actually doing. So we are going to act on the resolution. We've already gotten the Avalo Partners Energy Audit. And there's two high school, the old gym. There's two contracts at Slow High and one at Morro Bay. Mm-hmm. So are we taking action on all of those things, or are we just approving the resolution and then that takes the rest of the actions? I'm looking at Mrs. Holmes because she always knows the answer.
Well, the resolution is a formality that the legal counsel has advised you must take these steps to make certain findings before the contracts can be entered into. But the second part of your action tonight will be to authorize staff to enter into those three contracts.
Perfect. Hit it, Ellen.
Okay, then I would say that my husband put LED lights in our bathroom, and they make you look 200 years old and extremely unattractive. So although we probably will pass this and install that lining, I don't plan to be lingering in any of those facilities. I'm looking for someone who would like to move. Mrs. Sheffer.
I would move acceptance of Resolution 12-15-16 Energy Services Agreement.
So I have a motion by Mrs. Sheffer, a second by Mr. Buckman. Mrs. Holmes?
Mrs. Sheffer?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Mr. Quessenberry?
Yes.
Dr. Eisendrath-Rogers?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Mr. Millar?
Yes.
And Mr. Unger is absent, passes 6-0.
We will write into the specs next time that it can only make you look 85 years old, if that helps for future projects.
It's gnarly. It's really gnarly.
Anyway,
okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. We've previously taken care of item 10.01, so moving on to 10.02, approve educator effectiveness plan. And that is presented by Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, so as the process of being able to utilize these funds, we had to have a public hearing at our last board meeting, and this is the chance for the board to actually approve the educator effectiveness plan. These are funds that are specifically focused on professional development for teachers, administrators, classified staff, and so what we've done is kind of laid out the actual amount the district's going to receive and applied those to some of our basically our professional development for both groups, or actually for all groups, over the course of both 15-16 and 16-17.
Okay, I'm looking for any discussion, additional discussion on this item. Oh, we'll go to the public. Is there anyone who wishes to comment on this item? Seeing no one, then we'll bring it back to the board. Mr. Millar.
I will move approval of the Educator Effectiveness Funding Plan.
So I have a motion by Mr. Millar, second by Mr. Quessenberry. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? That passes unanimously.
Thank you.
Item 10.03 is the formation of a board subcommittee to brainstorm our board, our July board retreat.
Yeah, so it's that time again, and I'm looking for volunteers on the board to participate in an exciting and important time to plan for your summer workshop, which is July 12th. And
retreat makes it sound like we're having our nails done, but we are not.
I was asked to not call it a retreat anymore, so it's a workshop in the summer, typically here at the district office, in case anyone's wondering. So I'm looking for three volunteers.
Well, even though it's not a retreat and it's a workshop, I'll volunteer to do that.
Thank you. Mr. Millar?
First of all, I have a very stormy brain, so I think I would be natural for this. And secondly, I feel so guilty for having dodged it for so long that I will raise my hand.
So we have Mr. Millar, Dr. Eisendrath Rogers, and I need one more Patsy. That be you, Mr. Buckman? Well, Mrs. Sheffer has, I think, participated the last couple of years. Yes, but we all lean heavily on her.
No one else is interested. If you're interested more, step
out. Okay, Mr. Buckman, are you... Is this a...
All right, I will throw out my name.
No. Okay, so, Mr. Buckman, I'm going to accept your kind offer. And so we then have, are we in agreement that we have a summer workshop subcommittee consisting of Mr. Buckman, Dr. Eisendrath Rogers, and Mr. Millar?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Then moving on, we have item 10.04, proposed revisions to board policy 5117, students inter-district attendance. This is a first reading.
Thank you. I'm actually suggesting three changes to a policy that gets referred to a lot in our school district by parents. This is one that actually parents read quite frequently, and that's part of the reason why a couple of these revisions are being suggested for you. So, first of all, we have a crossed-out section in paragraph 2 that it's our recommendation to take out. I believe that first sentence especially is really directed towards revenue limit districts, and we actually get questions about that when we make a statement that says, hey, we're capable of serving more students. The fact is, obviously, anyone who moves into our area, we're going to serve, but the very strong statement we make in all of our correspondence is that it is a hardship to serve students who don't reside within our community. We receive no revenue limit dollars for those students, unlike virtually every other district in our county. And so it's our suggestion that we just take that out, because obviously it's an inter-district agreement. We will serve some students, but to make a statement that says that we're capable of serving additional students just is actually something that gets thrown in our face quite a bit. So that's just a suggestion. Secondly, we have a paragraph in there that is part of our administrative regulations and is consistent with education code, but think it should probably be included in the board policy, which really is that all of our inter-district attendance agreements are just for 1 year. They're all annual. We do make every family renew them or come back and ask again. We always want to reserve that right as a school district to say, you know, we have budget issues. We cannot afford to take more students. Or even though you've had this for even a number of years, we cannot necessarily continue it. So I think it's important to make that known that this is an annual occurrence. I'd say about half of the school districts that do inter-district agreements in our county make them annual, and some of them actually make them for multi-years. But our suggestion and our practice is to have an annual agreement. And the last last paragraph is just a change in Education Code, Assembly Bill 306, amended Education Code, to say that we can't preclude or stop a student from leaving our school district for reason of active military duty, which I can't imagine us doing. But anyway, it's part of Ed Code, so we figure it should be part of the policy. Those are the suggestions. It's a first reading, and welcome any questions or feedback.
Okay, I'll take it to the public. Is there anyone that would like to address this item? Seeing no one, we'll bring it back. Mr. Buckman.
Thanks, Rick, and I think these are, in particular, the capability of serving students is probably a really good one to look at in terms of our financial, the way we finance the district. The question I have, and it may be in the ARs, often when school districts do inter-district transfers, they have an agreement that the siblings can then follow through. And I'm going to guess, let me just ask, do we address that in the AR, or do we not need to?
We do not, and we make every one of them be independent. Our practice is typically and often to accept siblings. I mean, the last thing we want to do is create hardships for a family having, you know, students in two different school districts. But it is not part of our ARs. We don't guarantee that.
Mr. Millar.
Well, I think these are really important changes. I mean, you know, we don't get any revenue for the students, so this is really diluting our ability to provide for our own students. And, of course, I had a note for when the county superintendent was speaking to us that I decided just to keep to myself. And I'm glad we do it on a case-by-case basis. There's going to come a time, if Diablo Canyon closes, where we're really going to have to fight the battle on inter-district transfers and sibling preference. I mean, it's good to be understanding of parents and the dilemmas and families and the dilemmas they face. I'm glad you tightened this policy up. I think it's important, and I don't feel that if there's consensus that we can act on this tonight. I would make the motion to approve the changes to board policy 5117.
Okay, so I have a motion by Mr. Millar and second by Mr. Buckman. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes unanimously.
Thank you.
Okay, item 10.05. Five is board approval of district standard products for incorporation in future projects. I imagine that's Mr. Palazzo.
Yep, me again. Okay, so as you saw at our last study session, Mr. Rick Stimson has been hard at work over the last year compiling an entire book, and he just printed out the final draft of the book, and it's about that thick. It's got a myriad of products that we've got, and we're setting up as kind of our district standards. But you know, as part of the legal requirement that we have for products that we want to sole source and be the only or one or two only products that we would use in different categories, we've got to make a board action on that. And it really revolves around when we want to use like just one plumbing fixture, one type of plumbing fixture, because the cartridges or the replacement pieces, et cetera, we want to stock or that matches other products in the district, like our painting systems, so that they're all compatible, et cetera, things like that. We need to take action on those specific items. The other 60-some product district standards, we have several different products that we're willing to accept as part of our quote-unquote standards for those. So those don't require a board action to say that's our only products, because we've given a series of products we can select from. And they're not as critical for maintenance purposes or you know, for stocking replacement parts, et cetera, but it is critical that we have a quality level that we're trying to establish with our construction teams as we go out to bid. So, well, what you have in front of you tonight is those list of products that are actually kind of a sole source product that matches other products that we already have in the district or that we're currently are in our projects under bid or under construction, so that we now have a cohesive protocol, if you will, for you know, specifying our different materials and products that we're going to be using, so that in the long run we've got a much easier job of maintaining those products. So we're seeking approval of this list of district standards for incorporation into our projects going forward.
Okay. Is there anyone from the public that would like to comment? Seeing no one, I'll bring it back. Mrs. Sheffer. Oh, Mr. Pinkerton.
Just quick on top of what Anthony has described to the board. And again, we went through some of this at our board study session as well. But again, kudos to Rick Stimson and his team. I mean, if you go through the list and the energy and effort that went into ensuring that we have the best you know, standards for our district, because again, this is going to, in the long run, save us a lot of money. So things are going to last. It's going to help us in the future. I mean, just all of those things went into it. And so, again, I just wanted to say kudos to Rick and his team for putting this together and the time they spent to get it right.
Okay. Probably no flowers for that one, though.
You could see the wheels turning.
I knew where you were going. Kelly probably will get some flowers tomorrow. It's going to start costing me a lot of money.
No, I was actually thinking, I wonder if Mr. Stimson has ever indicated a preference for what type of flowers.
We'll talk to him.
Okay, Mr.
Cousinberry. It's getting expensive for me.
Well, it was interesting to go through this list. Having done some of my do-it-yourself things, a 50-year roof, I thought, wow, I wish I'd known about that. Anyway, I just wanted to comment. I noticed that these are within 10 feet of a building, and so I understand that you don't want any large trees. I was just a little disappointed my favorite tree wasn't in there, which is the coastal live oak. But I noticed that you do have some native plants like ceanothus and so forth. So, and you have two separate zones, so I thought that was smart. But I didn't get my sunset gardening book out to check all these, so I'll just have to trust you folks. Thank you.
Mrs. Sheffer.
I, too, want to echo everyone's thoughts here about Rick Stimson. I was so impressed with the work he'd done and the research he'd performed and his time spent doing this work, working with these products and becoming aware of them and able to make sound recommendations based on his life experience with these things. I also wanted to express my gratitude that pulling something like this together will help so much with inventory control, as was pointed out. We won't have 20 different kinds of faucets or 34 different colors of paint or 17 kinds of shingles on the roofs to then have to always be able to order for a particular site that where one site or perhaps even one room within one site is different from any other, and we have to either keep things on hand or always know where those things, where to attain those items when needed. So I think that will help a great deal with keeping costs down, not using up space unnecessarily to store things over at BG&T or elsewhere at the site. It will make things easier to make repairs when needed. And having Rick on the job and helping others in the development of his book will help with quality control from now into the future. So I think that's I'm all for this. So please let Rick know how grateful we all are to him to getting the wheels rolling in this regard.
I will. Thank you.
Mr. Millar.
I would like to second those comments and just add that based on my imperfect knowledge of design build, this level of specificity will really help us when we get into our design build projects, and I appreciate it too.
All right, then.
I'm sorry.
Oh, okay, Mr. Buckman.
Just going to get a little red flashlight.
Or, you know, if you lift
it
up,
I see.
Or whatever, I can see it.
I can use one of those new standing desks.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam President. So I was lucky enough to have a discussion with Anthony about this, and again, I echo everything everybody said to Rick. But I asked and said, well, I'm getting questions about what color paint is going to be out there. And Anthony, if you could just give me...
We'll paint it any color they want as long as it's Navajo white. So
I was unable to answer the question, so I called Anthony. So his answer was perfect.
Right. So at this point, we're really only specifying the product type and the product systems, if you will. The colors will really kind of leave to the architects for the specific projects that we're undertaking, or it could be to match existing colors if we're just tying something in existing on the campus. So that's really not part of this formal legal action we're taking tonight. We will be bringing the designs and the colors back, and we are kind of honing in on a palette of 3 to 5 colors that we're going to be kind of using to move forward. We'll see that kind of coming out at the C.L. Smith project this summer, as well as the Teach paint project this summer. They're very neutral. They're very non-polarizing, if you will. But the idea is that we've got a fairly
sort of muted and universal color palette that'll kind of go with anything. And then, as we always say, you accentuate it with, you know, accessorize it with, you know, splashes of color in either furniture or in some other element, or drapes or pillows or, you know, whatever, or that rug ties the room together. But whatever element we use that kind of can be moved, that's where we put our splashes of color, and we kind of try to keep our rooms and our buildings a fairly universal or timeless color palette.
Okay, well...
I'm a graduate of the Home and Garden Channel, and I'm willing to help out any way I can with the color selections.
So you can meet at 7:30 on Thursdays in our office, and we talk about all these things.
Oh,
okay.
I'm probably the only person sitting up here who actually did get the Navajo white joke, and did you get it? And also the really ties the room together. So I'm crediting you with two tonight, and I would make a motion to approve the district standard products. So we have a motion by myself, a second by Mr. Quesenberry. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That passes unanimously.
Okay.
Thank
you. Guys are putting the fun back in functional. Thank you.
601. Oh, I beg your pardon. That would be 6 with 1 absence. So we're moving on to the action consent agenda. Please let me know if there's anything that you would like to be pulled. Item 11.01, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. 11.02, accept initial bargaining proposal from SEIU. 11.03, acceptance of donations. 11.04, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 11.05, approval of purchase orders. 11.06, approval of warrants and payroll. And 11.07, approval of the quarterly report on uniform complaint filings, the Williams settlement. Okay, I will be seeking then a motion for approval of items 11.01 through 11.07.
I would so move.
And I also second.
So we have a motion by Mrs. Sheffer, a second by Mr. Millar. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, that's 6 in favor and 1 absent. Does anyone have anything that they would like to propose for the advance agenda? Seeing no one, we'll move on then. Reports by board members.
Sure. Okay, I'll do part of it. During the break, I had an opportunity to visit Morro Bay High School and San Luis High School with Ron Holcomb. I wanted to do that while students were not present, but I would like to say that at Morro Bay High School in the morning, it was fun because Mr. Rapucci was there. And when we went over to look at what it was important to me to have an opportunity to have kind of a visual of our Measure D plans and take a look after having looked at things on paper. Mr. Millar graced us with his presence in the afternoon at San Luis High, but it was very informative, but it was great fun to have an opportunity to talk to Mr. Rapucci, who was working away. His students are working on a project of building a deck. And they've made a little shed structure and were working on the deck. And he was there just making sure working with the materials, making sure he had everything he needed. But listening to his enthusiasm about the report on the Skills USA and his students and the gratitude he expressed to us for the support of that, but also just, you know, he just has such excitement all the time about the work he does with these students and how much he's built this deck or done a project like this every year for many years, and you would think it was the first time he was tackling something, and none of his students were there. He had no one to impress or reason to, and was there over the break doing what he needed to do. So It was great. That was a sort of serendipitous highlight to the day. And then seeing where we're going with Measure D, what has been done over there, just wandering around. There was someone from above grade surveying his job is to survey every piece of the campus. He was surveying the columns throughout the campus and then coming over to San Luis High and walking the grounds and having a better picture of what's going to, how things are going to look there, looking at the plans, and then kind of having a better opportunity to visualize on the ground. So it was a very useful day, and I appreciate how hard staff works when the students are not here. So thank you.
If I could, I just wanted to add that at SLO High, Mr. Holcomb was showing us where the new building was going to go and a lot of other things, but what struck me was looking at the current admin building and with that second story and the kind of funky grill thing out there, and he's trying to explain to us what they were trying to do. So then it happened to be the bridging architects were up in district offices, and we went up there partly to see what they were up to, and standing there in the entry of the admin offices, they had plans laid out, and the top plan was at one treatment for the admin building and how to change that sort of unusual structure at the top, and it looked incredible. Now, I don't know if that's what they're going to end up doing, but it'll be something like that. And it really kind of made it, really made it real, made it more accessible for me to see what they have in mind and the possibilities for what we'll end up doing. It's very helpful. Appreciate Mr. Holcomb doing that.
Mr. Button.
Hi. Thank you. So I think that I think I saw almost every board member at Back Beach Open House. I think I ate almost every hamburger, but that was good. And it was exciting to meet the parents and the staff over there. I also got to attend the LCAP at Pacheco, and the caring and the concern of the staff for their students, the depth of it was just amazing. And I'm assuming it was that way at all the other school sites, but I did make it to Pacheco, and I just want to mention that. And just last, two other things. I for some reason keep seeing district vehicles all over town, and I just have to say the difference between this and 3 years ago and it looking, I'm sorry, Beverly Hillbillies driving around in our pickup trucks, in the look of the trucks and the quality of the trucks and how that reflects on the district is just amazing, and I'd just like to send that out to everybody over the building and grounds and transportation.
And no Measure D dollars are used for
no Measure D dollars. No
general fund only.
No, it was the oil we found in the digging. No, it's really nice. But the other thing that strikes me is I did have to drive over to Clovis. I did have to drive over to Clovis the other day, and as I was driving through, I think I went through Lemoore and Kernville and McKittrick, and I was driving along, and at every one of the school districts there was a banner that either said, "We need substitutes, we need teachers," and at one of the districts it said, "We need bus drivers." And I we heard it today, and I just can't say how lucky we are in this district, because we get them and we keep them. Thank you.
Catherine.
I was walking around SLO High the other few days ago in the afternoon, and I ran into some students who were practicing for the upcoming production of Guys and Dolls. But what I was really excited to learn was, I feel like I can't go to their productions because it's such a small theater and you don't want to displace parents and kids who want to go. But so they told me, though, that they're performing outside I know Ms. Newland knows this because her daughter's in the production, and but I didn't know it. So 100, they can handle 150 people, and probably if you can hang out in the shadows, you can watch even if they have that many already. And it's coming up this week, right? This Thursday, Friday, Saturday? Yeah, so I just wanted to let you know because there's room for everybody, guys and dolls.
Thank you. Well, if there's no additional board comment, then we will stand adjourned.